listening.
And we're all.
Hello and welcome to Hum and Kip Knows Best. We have, we Kip a Micah.
And I'm Hum, we're a Micah.
And we're obviously Micahs.
And ironically, they're not unkempt.
They're not un-what?
Kemp.
You're and you're Kemp, and the both of you are bikers, yet you're not unkempt. Unkempt means not tidy.
Oh, okay then. Well, there you go. Yeah. I gotta be schooled up in some of the lingo.
Yeah, you might have to put the messages over here, bro, and a bit of a definition because Māori is our first language.
Oh, okay.
That's my excuse. No.
Well, I wrote a dissertation and I still just used bloody
jargon,
like autocorrect.
Oh,
yeah. I thought dissertation was like some kind of Chinese dessert.
Asians. Oh, yeah. Nice. Like in fluctuation.
Yeah.
It's fluctuation. Anyway, have you heard that joke? This Samoan guy, it was this Chinese guy. He goes over to Samoa. And he went into the first dairy and he asks, excuse me, but how much is that coconut over there, please? And the dairy owner, he goes, this is my best Samoan accent. He goes, that's about 20 cent, please. Oh, I just go to the next dairy and see if I can get it. But how much it costs over there? That was the Chinese guy, sorry. So he goes into the next dairy. Goes, excuse me, how much is your coconut, please? And the dairy owner goes, it's about 25 cent. Yeah, 25 cent. Hold on, I go next dairy. This goes to the next dairy. Excuse me, can I have a coconut here? How much? 30 cent, thanks. 30 cent. And Chinese guys. Why is it 5 cent if a dairy? It's called inflation. No, it's not. It's called fluctuation. And the Chinese guy says, no, fluck you, coconut.
Oh, man. Yeah, you see, I was driving down the back of New Lynn this one time, and I saw a couple of islanders there with a van with a big sign that said coconuts for sale. And I went, frick, that's racist. Wait, wait a second. Oh, they're actually selling coconuts.
Did you seriously think it was?
Well, just for a second. You know how you have that kind of preeminent flash, and you're like, oh my God, what the hell is going on here? Oh, wait a second, it's not as bad as I thought.
Well, let me introduce you to our listeners. This is Vinny Eastwood, and I listen to a show, try and listen to it every day, but it's actually during class time, so I could not be doing it then. I don't listen to it. I listen to it after school. Anyway, just introduce yourself to our listeners, please.
Well, I'd say that when you listen to it after school, that's when the actual schooling begins, and the rest of it's all BS. Or at least that's been my experience of high school, primary school, university, higher education, the workplace, much protesting, much volunteer groups and everything. Basically, unless you're doing something by yourself that's totally original, you ain't really doing anything of value, and you're probably not going to learn terribly many lessons of value either whilst within that constrained frame. And this is a very sad realization that happened to me. I was thinking about becoming a filmmaker, and I went to uni. My very first job was actually writing and directing my own play on Waiheke Island. I wrote it, directed it, produced it, got all the, there were like 14 actors or something in it. Incidentally, all of them were all my friends, and incidentally, the top actors on the island. So got it done, raised me all the money I needed to drive all the frackway down to Dunedin so I could start going to Otago University to learn film and media. And guess how much film and media I learned? Nothing. I did learn, however, when I got busted for selling cannabis when I was down there with 13 grams, that that's actually a jailable offence. You know, if you're selling weed to somebody, you've got it rolled up in tinnies or whatever, even if it's 13 grams, you can go to jail for up to 8 years. Yeah, they treat it more seriously than manslaughter, bro. And Yeah. My mum got into massive debt to bail me out. All my friends just basically disappeared. They weren't my friends. They were just coming around to smoke weed. You know, you suddenly your whole reality implodes on you, and you suddenly go from this really naive kind of thinking, oh, everything's going to be right. People aren't deceptive. People aren't thieving scum and so on and so forth. Meanwhile, I get like 10 grand worth of stuff nicked out of me from my room by my flatmates while I'm away with a weekend with my mum after all of this happens. I get assaulted in my room by one of my flatmates and so on and so forth. Really raw deal, man. And me for 13 grams of cannabis, I wound up with 300 hours community service. I was really lucky because the cops didn't advise me of my rights before they took my full confession.
True.
Yeah. So inadmissible as evidence. And then the guy in front of me in court was up for sexual assault, resisting arrest, and 5 cannabis plants. He got 150 hours community service.
What?
Yeah. It's quite odd. And the person in front of him was charged with stealing a jar of crazed jam. It looked like he'd just gone out of heroin rehab or something. And he was charged with stealing a jar of Craig's raspberry jam to the value of $4.26 or something like that from the local BP service station. And he was ordered by the court with all the lawyers and everything, you know, coming in to prosecute this guy from the BP Corporation to repay the $4.26 for the replacement of the jar of Craig's jam.
Whereabouts in Dunedin were you, bro?
The Northeast Valley during that incident, but I lived on Cargill Street, just kind of just overlooking the city kind of thing. It was bloody cold, man. Like, it was on average, I had like a temperature gauge on my G-Shock watch that somebody gave me for Christmas many years ago. And it was on average 5 degrees colder inside than it was outside. Yeah. I'd wake up in the morning... And there'd be a layer of condensation on my mink blanket. Like, seriously, there's actually water on my mink blanket that I'm sleeping under, right? I had one of the struts in my bed being held up by a bear crate, you know, real Dunedin style, except it adjusted it just a little bit too much, so I wound up with this twinge in my back. There were mushrooms growing out of the walls of the house and that kind of thing. The hallway was starting to sink in, sort of like a half pipe. You know, give it 50 more years, they can do the next X Games there, bro. It'd be sweet as. We had mold encrusting the entire ceiling of the bathroom there, no ventilation. We had a weatherboard missing off the front of the house and let all the draft through and everything. It snowed once while we were down there, and we got about maybe 30 minutes of sunshine from between 10 o'clock in the morning until about 10:30 a.m. and then the sun was gone for us on our side of the street, and the rest of the street got it all. So the one time that it snowed down there was still snow on our front lawn about 6 months later. it was cold, man. Like people say to me, oh, I've been in cold climate, you don't know what you're talking about. It's like, really, bro? Have you seen your olive oil freeze at room temperature yet?
No way, they're cold, bro.
Yeah, we
used to live just across the road and from the library down. Yeah, and man, it was freezing. I remember waking up in the morning, walking down our corridor in Dunedin, and it was just like the walls were pissing down with water, all the condensation that, you know, and we still had to pay like fucking $100. It was like, so we used to cram quite a few of us, you know, there's heaps of people doing it. You know, just cram 3 or 4 people in a bloody room.
Well, they got the big rooms that are impossible to heat. One time our little fireplace didn't have a proper grill or whatever, and it took like, bought $30 of coal, burned it, and it kept the room warm for 3 hours, and then that was it.
Shit, all right.
Yeah, some hard times. But I needed those hard times, and I think that's that's part of my philosophy, is that we all need hard times in order to change the things that we're doing and the things that we're going through. If you don't strength test, say, a building or a bridge or some kind of construction implement, if you don't test what its limits are, you'll never know whether or not it's safe. And as a person, you know, you've got to put yourself into, or rather, if you've been fortunate enough to be in situations where you've had people that are close to you betray you, that you've had all your money stolen off you or all your items of personal ownership, if you've had your the course of justice subverted and so on and so forth. All of these really terrible experiences do different things to people. Some people get activated. They see the life of what it is and they go out and they fight against it and they dedicate the rest of their lives to destroy the very scumbaggery that was the affliction. That's kind of what happened to me. What happens to other people is they blame man itself.
Kevin.
They blame everybody for what happened to them. It was their personal choice to be in that situation a lot of times. Sometimes it's not their choice. But the thing is, if it ain't your choice, it ain't your fault, and you shouldn't be blaming yourself or everybody for it. And they never grow up. They never develop proper coping mechanisms. They never figure out that laughing about really terrible things that happen to you is a very healthy response. They take everything too seriously. They take themselves too seriously. They take everything that you say about them personally. And they're impossible.
Then they go and shoot up a school. Sorry.
Well, no, they'd have to be taking Prozac or some other kind of psychotropic drug, which every single major school shooting in the US has in common, is they're all on huge masses of psychotropic drugs that actually say on the warning label, may cause murder-suicide. All right?
Shit. It actually says that on the warning label.
Yeah. It's one of the possible side effects, you know. Here's this, it'll alleviate your depression. Yeah. Really, what are the side effects? Well, you might kill yourself and other people.
Suicidal.
Okay, well, it sounds worth the risk, doesn't it? and the other thing that all the school shootings have in common as well is they all happened in gun ban zones. There have been a number of attempted...
Gun ban.
Yeah. So nobody's armed. There have been a number of attempted school shootings at schools that don't have gun bans, where some of the teachers have guns in their desk and so on and so forth. The gunman was shot before he could kill a single innocent soul.
Do you reckon it'll ever happen here, bro?
Oh, it's already happened. Didn't we have some dude down in the South Island or something like that shoot up a bunch of people, like, years and years ago kind of thing?
Yeah, and that was from that movie, the... Into the Blue
Some guy in a small beach community or whatever had a couple of weapons, and what happened with that incident
Aramoana, I think.
That rings a bell. And he had a number of things that would be classed as quote-unquote assault weapons, repeating rifles, so on and so forth. And at the time, it was perfectly legal for people to have weapons like that, except he had them illegally. So he broke the law in order to possess these weapons and the capacities and what have you than they have there. But after he was arrested or killed or whatever the fuck happened to him, then they decide that everybody's the enemy. Everybody needs to now have a safe bolted to the wall and floor in order to secure their firearms from anybody else, even though nobody stole this guy's firearms or went on a rampage with him. And this is part of a global anti-gun agenda that the UN is spearheading to take away people's rights to defend themselves. Now, you can't name me a single civilization or culture or country throughout the entirety of history that had gun bans where the population wasn't enslaved or exterminated. Okay, even way back to Edward the Longshanks, he banned weapons for the Scottish because he wanted to kill and enslave them. And this is a long-running history of disarming people. And I don't know if you've ever talked to any gun owners, but frack, they're very, very safe people. They're often very... say paranoid, but maybe a little overly cautious about their firearms safety, who they talk to about them, that
kind
of thing.
Would you say passionate?
Absolutely passionate. And the thing is, they're also very afraid to speak out, because anybody who starts demonizing gun control automatically gets this really wonderful fanfare or whatever to help them, you know, oh, we need to get guns off the streets, they're really bad and what have you. And they're not States, sure, you have 11,486 gun deaths per year, but the gun deaths are very minimal when you compare them to about 200,000 prevented crimes of rape, assault, murder, and so on and so forth that are actually presented by merely the pointing of a firearm. 98.something% of people never even discharge their firearm, and only like 1% of those people who do discharge their firearm are even aiming at the person, you know? So we've got a paranoid sort of response
society,
to guns.
Yeah.
And self-defense and anything. I mean, you heard this about this some guy who was getting
everything.
His quad bike stolen from some hoodlum or whatever. He's stealing your private property, and you can't even take a shot at him when he's stealing your property on your property. You know, that strikes me as freaking insane. Man's home is his castle. That seems perfectly reasonable, doesn't it? If you're doing something illegal or unlawful, or you're trying to kill somebody, then you should be able to defend yourself. However, that's a bit of a risque case because his life wasn't actually under threat. They were just going to steal the quad bike and take off. They weren't busting into the house. They weren't trying to hurt him or his family. So there's a little bit of a leeway there to this type of legislative action that might be taken. But, you know, it doesn't matter at the end of the day when you come to that realization that every single time when you ban guns for the average people and only the soldiers and cops can have them, the soldiers and cops with absolute monopolistic force power kill and enslave everybody. It happens every single time. Lithuania, China, Russia, Germany,
New Zealand.
We haven't been totally, like, forcefully, ruthlessly enslaved just yet. You don't see them killing people left, right, and centre, do you?
Well, just left.
Because we've still got a lot of guns in this country. We've got almost. Did you know that there's actually more guns per capita in Canada than there is in the US? And we've got comparable amount of gun ownership here in New Zealand. Lots of farmers have multiple rifles, 22s, 308s. I don't know, some of them might even have shotguns and so on and so forth. The point where a domestic insurrection is impossible is when all of those kind of personal weapons that can actually fight back against an invading force are taken from people. And what people don't realize is that the invading force invariably happens to be your government, not other countries.
Oh yeah, absolutely agreed with that, right? Absolutely agree with that.
Wow. When we were down Dunedin, one of my mates' mother represented Tamaiti in them on the Tuhoe raids, you know, and then it was just so funny how, you know, those charges that they laid against them were just ones.
Seven out of the nine of those warrants issued were ruled by Chief Justice Winkleman to be unlawful. Chief Justice Winkleman sealed that judgment so that the media would not be allowed to report on it. Somebody called Vince Seymour from KiwisFirst.co.nz, noted judicial watchdog, was jailed just recently, went to jail for 3 weeks for reporting that happened. Because you should be allowed to report on important frickin' details, like the government's breaking its own law and the courts are covering it up, for example. And incidentally, John Key has just recently said that he will prevent any investigation into judicial corruption under his term in government. I wonder why.
That's awesome.
Yeah, fuck, that's awesome. It's fucking awesome how you can make up your own rules, Amy. Just imagine if we could do that.
The thing is, I could sit here and hyperbolize everything about this government and say that it's the most corrupt ever, they're killing people left, right, and center, and they got bioweapons in the water supply, and so on and so forth. I could actually literally make bad stuff up in my head, and 90% of the time wind up being correct. That's the terrible truth about this country. People are like, oh, it's nice, you know, you got the Maldives and grass skirts, and you got the beautiful fucking mountains next to the water, bro. Oh, it's wonderful, you know, we'll come over there for a holiday and get kidnapped by some guy while I'm hitchhiking along the fucking road. Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful.
And then get here and then find out that fucking like 90% of our rivers, lower land, are all fucking polluted.
Yeah, you know why? Yeah. I was like sitting in a car with Kaumatoa. He took me down to the Tikawiti Temple of the Four Winds. The English burned it down back in the day, right? And a very sacred place to them. And I'm the first journalist to ever in this country's history be invited down there. Very, very fucking honoured to be there, bro. Yeah.
Awesome, bro.
And they were telling us, what was interesting is when we were in the car, you know, those graveyards sometimes on the side of the road and whatever? He always toots the horn of his car and says, g'day, bros. You know, I found the Kaumata are very, very connected to the spiritual side of the human being. You know what I'm saying? Like that kind of shit hasn't been drummed out of their generation yet, not entirely anyway. And he was talking about when he was a farmer, and you needed to keep your cows away from the river. Okay, at least 50 meters away from the river at all times. And at night, you take them up the hill, good 150 meters away minimum, in order to keep any effluent from going into the river. And when we're driving through Otorohanga on our way to Tikawiti, we see the fence lines right up on the side of the road. On the other side of the fence is the fucking river that the cows are walking and shitting in.
Out of it, eh, bro.
That's how it is, man. That's how it is.
See, that's what happens when you give it to corporate scumbaggery interests who have no interest in maintaining the land or a custodian title or anything like that. There's a number of Māori organisations. One guy in particular talked at a socialist meeting that I was at, where they've been given control of like nearly 1,000 lakes and rivers around New Zealand, right? Yeah. And guess how many of those rivers is currently clean? Every single one of them. The government has control of the rest of the lakes and rivers. Guess how many of them is clean? Not a fucking one of them, okay? This is the difference between Māori custodianship and government custodianship. Government is run by companies, okay? Companies don't give a fuck about the land. They're keen on making a quick buck. They don't care. You know, they'll come in with their fracking operations. They'll pollute the water table so that nobody can fucking live there, and then you've got to go live in the megacity slave block somewhere. Yeah. They don't give a fuck.
But that's like Waihee too, you know, when they put done all the mining and shit there, you know, you get online and have a look at there. I think that's the Watchdog, you know, and a lot of what they've posted on there, it's full on, eh? You know, they said that they were going to go there and then that, you know, there'll be ample jobs, and then they established it and they've got a worse, like, I think, unemployment rate than Pairoa, which is, you know, right next door to Waihee. And I think they've got they almost got a lower population.
Pairoa?
It's something like that anyway, but it's full on, eh? That's what they do.
Yeah. I mean, and you've got two general assumptions for life that I follow. One, if it comes from an official source of some kind, then it's probably the direct opposite of whatever they're telling you, the exact opposite. So if they say they're going to create jobs, oh, they must be trying to create poverty and unemployment. Oh, okay. If they say they're trying to create trade deals because it'll be better for the economy, it's like, oh, they're creating trade deals so that foreign corporations can seize control of our country and fuck us all and deprive us of any income or resources that actually belong to this freaking country through the TPPA and so on and so forth. If they tell you that the medical system is there to heal you, then obviously they must be there to kill you. And incidentally, that's actually true. The Ministry of Health is now officially, according to their own records, the second leading cause of death in New Zealand. That's not including all the unreported vaccine reactions and unreported this, the unreported that and the other and that kind of thing. They're there to sell poisons, yo! Hospitals... Sorry, go ahead.
That isn't it funny how they called it the health system?
Yeah. Well, Edward Bernays was the father of propaganda. He was the nephew of Sigmund Freud. If you want to learn about Edward Bernays, look about the documentary called The Century of Self. Very, very interesting thing. He's the person who got suffragettes to smoke. You know, the women who were campaigning to give women the vote and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
He got to some of those high-class ladies to smoke cigarettes while they're in a protest and called them torches of freedom. And before you knew it, the tobacco companies had a huge female customer base that just lumped up out of there. He's the person who got a waste pork product known as bacon that was never eaten or enjoyed by people because it was too fatty and gross. He said, you can't have your eggs in the morning without your bacon. And now all of a sudden bacon and eggs is a huge freaking popular meal. He told people all these things, and he wrote a book called Propaganda. He's literally the man who wrote the book on propaganda. He's the man who told the United States Department of War, No, don't call yourself the Department of War. Call yourself the Department of Defense.
Peace.
Ah, so now the trick starts to come out. Every single time you see these people doing what they're doing and saying what they're saying, it doesn't match up. And that's because it's deliberate. They know how to manipulate people into supporting things that are against their interests.
Yeah. Absolutely, brother.
But, man, and that brings, like, I was just thinking about that and I don't... like, because I got two twin boys, you know, and when they walk, even just the right down to the layout and shops and fucking everything, yeah, man. Bro. I walk in there and then they have all the bloody chocolates and everything on the same height as my kids, you know, and then they've got all these colorful bloody
and the
all
music.
Of the lollies and all of the fucking Powerade's the greatest thing for
They're
you.
They're doing everything but pumping synthetic pheromones through the motherfucking ventilation, yo. Which they do in, I believe they do that in some Las Vegas casinos. They actually pump pheromones through the fan system in order to make people calmer, so that they don't freak out when they're losing all their money and go back from the table, to actually keep them intensely interested. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, that's interesting.
It's just like how they diagnose all the ADHD kids with medication, so they're kept down and they're...
Oh, you can't concentrate? Here, kid, here's a watered-down version of fucking cocaine.
There you go, man.
If there's one thing that's good for a child, it's fucking cocaine.
Absolutely.
Feed them up. I mean, what does ADD mean? Well, I remember that somebody accused me of being ADD once, and it's like a four-part story. All right, so firstly, my mother gets suggested by my guidance counselor at school that I'm ADHD, and then she gets this pamphlet that has all these symptoms and stuff on it that says, low attention span, always doing other things, you know, a bit of fiddling, a lot of creativity, a lot of intelligence, a lot of this, that, and the other, and whatever. You know, it could have fit anybody, really.
Yeah.
And then my mum's like, no, I don't think we'll do that, and we'll go do a test. So we go to this doctor in Howick, right, and have a test. And it's just this stupid little computer program, like how fast is your reaction time? Like, can you it reads, you know, click the space bar or something like that, and then it gauges how fast it takes you to actually click that shit. And then I was just like, okay, that's fine. Do this test, and don't know what the score means or anything. So I go into the doctor, and he asked me this question. I'll never forget it. He says, did you have a father in the home for all or most of your life? And I said, no, actually my dad would live when he was 10. Oh, yep, you're probably ADHD then. And I was like, whoa, hold on a second. If this is a disease, how does my father being in a relationship have something to do with it? And then later on, a friend of mine tells me that ADD stands for attention dad disorder. For men that don't have good contact with their fathers, they have difficulty controlling their functions, their brains, and so on and so forth, because what happens is when you're born, you imprint on your male and female role models. That's why a lot of men, when they go out and date women, they date women that are actually a lot like their mothers, and a lot of women that go out and date men that are actually a lot like their fathers, because you get imprinted. If you don't have the imprinting plus the raising, then your brain doesn't know how to cope with it, kind of thing. This is my theory, and you can substitute that, and that's what my mother did. She hired a guy named Derek Haywood, who ran a Waiheke Blue Lavender Farm. Really, really cool guy. I got to hang out once a week and just do guy stuff and what have you. And suddenly, I stopped being violent. I started having a better attention span and so on and so forth. Just having that positive influence around. Mm. And then the last part of the story was when I was in university, in business school, and they put up the slide on the thing, and they had the very same symptoms of ADHD on that slide in business school. And do you know what they were describing? An entrepreneur. And I was like, whoa, hold on a second. Does that mean that entrepreneurs who are creative people, who have a strong will, who are capable of making things frickin' happen and changing the way people think about things, changing the way the world works, are the ones that have been targeted to get addicted to drugs that turn you into a frickin' zombie as early as freaking possible so that they cannot threaten the established order? One of my friends gave me an ADHD pill at university, you know, just to try out. And then I went to work, and instead of thinking my normal like 11 different thoughts and subjects all at the same time and all over the place, but really kind of bringing it together sort of thing, you know, like a rapper who's got a dictionary above his head and only words come out, it became like nothing. I was like looking up in my head, just going, "There's nothing. There's no creativity there. There's no joy, there's no fear, there's no love, there's there's nothing. That was what it felt like to me. It felt like I was a freaking zombie just kind of walking around doing the automaton thing. And that was very a profoundly scary experience for me, because I'd grown up to feel and know who I am by my thoughts, by my mind. And this thing managed to turn it off with just a little pill. And they're doing that to kids as young as 6 months old in the States. Now, seriously, a kid was, not for ADHD, I think. Maybe it was depression or whatever. An infant was diagnosed as depressed, and they put her on frickin' some kind of psych, like Prozac or frickin' whatever the hell. You know, we're just like living in a world where there's a pill for every ill. It's incidentally another Edward Bernays quote. Or at least I think he helped with the marketing campaign of that, because the Rockefeller Foundation had a lot of pharmaceutical contracts and what have you. They did this thing called the Flexner Report back in the late 1800s. They sent this dude around Flexner, right? At the time, you know how much you get paid for being a doctor, like per day? It was like a dollar. You know, doctors were cheap as chips. They were practically volunteers. So Flexner gets sent around at the behest of the Rockefeller Foundation to all of these different medical schools all around the country. You know, herbalists, naturopaths, medical doctors, psychiatry, and so on and so forth. And what he does is freaking horrific. He grades them as being very good or not very good. And all the ones that he graded not very good got shut down by the government. And all of those ones that got shut down were everything other than the allopathic medicine, which is the drug and the pill for every ill. So all of the other medicine disciplines and so on and so forth, herbalists, what have you, they were all out of the job. And the only thing people left with was drugs. They did the same thing to the Māori when they passed the Taonga Suppression Act. All the traditional medicines, everything that Māori used to control disease since they came to this freaking country was wiped out. Okay, and there's only a few practitioners left to my knowledge, and there's a desperate need for a resurgence in that, let alone the destruction to language and so on and so forth, because that's how they conquer people, man. If you can't speak the frickin' language, you're not going to identify with the culture, are you? Not anywhere near as good as you could.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and I suppose that's where our influence from our parents were, full-on the rejuvenation of te reo Māori, and our mother, she put together a whole big book, actually, and took all the photos of all the trees, because right where we are now, it was right in the middle of the bush, pretty much, and there was a lot of that, and we always heard, I suppose, the conversations that went on around our table were very, very different.
Absolutely.
When I look back on it, you know, they were very, very different from the average household, I would say.
Yeah.
And very political, you know.
Very aware, a spiritual, very spiritual. Our father was, he was very well known in the community, but very known as an eccentric man. He was the one who actually brought us up when we were babies. So it went against the grain. Our dad was the mum at home, the stay-at-home mum. And mum went out to work, and she was the teacher and paid all the bills. And that's kind of putting it real simple.
Well, it just went against the grain, really, what typical society says a male Māori should be. Yeah. You know, he should be working in the fucking forestry, providing putting the bacon, whatever.
Bringing home the bacon,
beating his wife, all that sort of shit, going down the pub.
Beating his kids up.
Our dad was quite the opposite, and he copped a lot of shit for it, eh?
Yeah. Mm.
And I mean, and just that's why what resonates for me when you're talking is about, having those male role models, for male kids, because I'm teaching in a Māngere at the moment, and there's such a huge need for it. Well, and then when you look at the stats, it's like, well, of course there's a fucking need for it, because we're at the bottom of the heap.
Yeah, have a look at the prison stats, man. I mean, if you don't have a father in
half of the prisoners.
Yeah. Well, I think
we're related to half of them.
Well, yeah, so 80% Māori or between 50% and 80%, I think somewhere around that region, you're nine times more likely, if you're a Māori man, to go to jail for the same offence as a Pākehā man.
Yeah.
You are 7 times more likely to wind up with a criminal conviction if you don't have a father in your house for all or most of your life. You know? These are very stark, very startling kind of straight up statistics. And you know what you can really kind of blame? You know, I'll piss a lot of women off by saying this, but the introduction of feminism into society.
In many ways, yeah. Definitely. Right.
Now,
in many ways.
Yeah, there's an old saying, follow the money. You ever heard of Deep Throat? The guy who exposed a whole bunch of stuff. He was the guy who led Woodward and Bernstein, the guys who brought out the fact that Richard Nixon was into a thing. Follow the money, right? Who financed feminism? Well, it turns out it was financed by the Rockefeller Corporation. Huh, how interesting. Who financed the most prestigious feminist magazine in the world? Well, it looks like the CIA was behind it. How interesting. And there's a guy named Aaron Russo. Have you ever seen the movie with Eddie Murphy, Trading Places, with Dan Aykroyd?
Yeah.
He produced that film. And he made a couple of documentaries called Mad as Hell and America from Freedom to Fascism. He made the classic documentaries about the case of how the US government was being taken over. And he had a personal relationship with Nicholas Rockefeller, and they have a conversation this one time. And Nicholas Rockefeller says to him, "Hey, Aaron, do you know what feminism was about?" And he's pretty naive at the time. And he says, "Yeah, I thought it's really good. You know, they give the women more rights and the right to work and that kind of thing is fine." And Rockefeller laughs at him and he says, "You know what, you're an idiot." And he goes, "Why? Why am I an idiot?" He says, "We funded that for two main reasons. There was half of the population currently that we couldn't tax. That's one reason. And to break up the family. If you break up the family unit and you get both parents out to work, it means that the kids get put into state care, like the high school systems or the daycare and so on and so forth, where the government can actually dictate the protocols of what they learn. In so doing, people develop a loyalty not to their parents as their teachers and guides through life, but to the state. Hitler did this. The very first piece of legislation that Nazi Germany passed that discriminated against a specific group of people wasn't the Jews, wasn't the blacks, wasn't the gays, wasn't the disabled people. It was homeschoolers.
Shit.
And that's why they had the Hitler Youth and everything. And this is what's happening now. I spoke to Ian Wishart from Investigate Magazine once. I had him on the show. And he was talking about how his boy was in class and they were teaching them about global warming and the UN and how it's great and all of that kind of stuff. And Ian Wishart's boy gets up and he says, "Well, I think the UN is a global government organization trying to kill and enslave us." And he was like, "That's my boy." But at the end of the day, that was Ian Wishart's son in that one very classroom being able to speak the truth towards one teacher on one particular subject. There aren't that many children like that in the public schools today. And gradually but surely every single child is being brainwashed in order to see the state as their chieftain.
Yeah. Yep. And that's infiltrated into our Kura Kaupapa system to an extent too, you know?
Yeah, it's starting to get that way within the Kura Māori and the Kura Kaupapa.
What they do is they come in and they bribe your leaders, okay? They say, "We'll give you this," or "This is going to be good for your people," or this and that and the other such and stuff. You don't want to do any business with the government if you're a social organization, in my opinion, because they're just too corrupt. They wind up taking it over every single fracking time, and they wind up getting people in their pocket. And once you're in their pocket, you ain't ever getting out. It's like Bricktop off the movie Snatch. It's a very scary, scary individual that would go in, willingly lie to people, have the actual intention to deceive them and to also work about some kind of scheme in order to destroy your community and your culture. And if you start up a new group, a new kind of community, a new kind of culture, they'll infiltrate that too. Right. You know, it's one of the American founding fathers said, "The price of freedom is eternal vigilance." It's never been more true today than it was back then, man.
Yeah,
people are not vigilant. They're not seeing the scumbaggery agents of the New World Order coming into their towns, coming into their mayoral offices and so on and so forth. They're not seeing it because they ain't looking for it.
Yeah,
and
right.
You know what this reminds me of? We started off this conversation by saying who I am and what I do. We've just gone off on a tangent. You know, it happens.
Not, right. This is fucking the corridor we want to hear, you know? This is the kind of speak my brother and I talk about all the time, you know? And we just want to be able to share it with the rest of our peers as well, because we don't really get this chance to speak so candidly about how we were brought up. They see it from the outside, but they lack the detail, and it's not a judgment call or anything. It just does.
Yeah. Well, the details are really important, and I think I kind of got into what I'm doing. I'm a 5 day a week, 2 hour a day talk radio show host on an American network. I'm the first New Zealander to ever host an American based talk radio show because I know more about America than most Americans do, which is a sad indictment on the nation as a whole. I know more about New Zealand than most New Zealanders would ever hope to dream to know. Not because
that wouldn't be too hard for the majority of the Americans, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
No. I just got right in there, you know. In New Zealand, it's a similar case, unfortunately, because I've been trying to listen to other talk radio show hosts in New Zealand, and you know, there's some people who get it right, you know, some of the time, and some people who get it right only a little bit of the time. But on the whole, you look at the whole picture, we don't really have alternative media in this country, right? Nothing official, nothing grounded, nothing regular, nothing that's top in the charts, nothing that's really going into bat directly against the mainstream media for all it's worth, except me. For 10 hours a week, I'm giving New Zealand activists and commentators and researchers and former employees of, say, I don't know, the Secret Service, for example, a platform to speak on my radio show for up to 2 hours at a time, so you get all those precious details, all that precious perspective. Because if you don't have perspective, you don't even know where you are, let alone who you are, let alone how the hell you're going to get out of the situation, do you? And that's what people have forgotten, is that they're trying to over-specialize. I'm a doctor. Okay, you're a doctor. What kind of doctor? I'm a surgeon. So let me get this straight. You've spent 8 years, maybe 10 years, learning how to do what you do, and the best thing that you can do is only one skill, and that's cutting people open and removing stuff from them. Is that about right? Okay, so see, this is what happens when you over-specialize. You suddenly ignore, you have to ignore the entire world in order to understand one aspect really well so you can do it. Okay, and this is what's been really ragging on me for other people, because I'm not like that. I'm a generalist. I like to know a little bit about everything rather than everything about a little thing.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. And
jack of all trades and master of none.
Yeah, exactly. And that's interestingly enough, you said that, because that was part of the 7-page essay that I wrote to my previous employer about how to actually run the company a lot better and more efficiently and have a lot more staff retention. That people in my position, the business account manager, should be a jack of all trades and a master of none kind of thing, to be able to help customers, especially important business customers, in order to do their thing. Whereas really they were just glorified salespeople, and I didn't like that. I didn't want to be a salesperson anymore. My last paycheck was working for a Vodafone subsidiary. I got $4,000 cash and $11,900 worth of Westfield vouchers as a bonus for a month's work. And that was at the point where I was just like, frack this. I don't want to work for scum anymore. I don't want to work for psychopaths. I don't want anybody telling me what to do ever again in my entire life. I want to be able to go into a place where they're planning on paying me money, and if I don't like them, I walk out. I want that kind of freedom. And so I spent all that money on a Mac computer here and a camera, and I started going out and filming protests and what have you. You know, every protest you go to, anybody who's on a megaphone or a microphone at a protest, I can guarantee you interview that person, they will blow your fracking mind with the amount of information that they have to give you. This is why these people lead protests. This is why they speak at them, because they're very well-versed. As far as I was concerned, these people in New Zealand are the new reporters. New Zealand Herald went from, like, 95 reporters in late 1990s, and now they're down to like five, a couple of years ago. There is no investigative reporting going on in this country really anymore whatsoever, to a large degree, and the only people who are doing the investigation, who know what they're talking about, who are capable of saying whatever they want to you without fear of repercussion because they've already lost everything, is the activists. And I seek to give them a voice every single day that I'm alive, I will make sure that those people get heard, not because I have to, but because I don't have a choice, because there is a lack of options for people to go to. I have activists come to see me, Vinny, can I have you on my radio show? I mean, I don't mean to impose or whatever. And it's just like, impose upon me? Dude, I've got 10 hours of radio content to fill up every single week. And you think you're imposing by offering to fill a couple of hours of that with incredible information from this suffering and shit that you've gone through? How all these fucking pieces of trash that are running the government and running the country into the fucking ground are persecuting you because you're exposing their scumbaggery? I don't think you're imposing at all, son. If anything, it'd be imposing on me to say, to tell you to do it all the time or whatever. You've already made the choice. I can't order you around to do anything, just like nobody can order me around to do anything, because I will do what is right. I will take the oath of a knight. I will swear to tell the truth, to stand in honor, and to have absolute respect for life, and to expose scumbaggery wherever it might sit, even if it be in the House of Parliament, even if it be in the Committee for Auckland. I will expose it and make sure that the people who are doing that really important work, all that research that I'm too much of an inept fuck to do, I will make sure that they get heard, because at least they're doing the work that nobody in the fucking media is doing, and I'll just give them a platform, because nobody in the media is doing that for them either.
We're just talking, like before we come on, we're like, fuck, that's why Hone Haruwira doesn't really succeed, eh? Because fuck, he always gets his ass kicked and handed to him when he's fuck, you know. Because, and that's why he broke away from the Maori Party. I mean, fuck, I've seen him down when he was protesting for when they were gonna put the motorway. So they threw on the housing in Auckland there. And fuck, he was sitting on the roofs, you know, he's right in there. He's always around, man, you know, you always see him. He's active.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, that's...
Well, his mother's a hardcore activist, isn't she?
Oh, hard, yeah, but she's fucking hardcore.
See, you know, your parents have such a massive imprint on your life. And what I find very interesting is that these very... what I call rugged individualists, who believe that because I can see the stars in the sky, that means all the knowledge of the world is open to me and all the situations can part ways. Yeah, that's not that case, bro. Those stars in the sky aren't going to fucking help you. There are situations that you're born into, you know. You might have violent parents who aren't employed. They're not providing good examples to you as a man or a future woman or whatever. And these things really... take a lot of time to get over. Like, I'm still not over my dad not being there for me, even though I've accumulated, I'd say, like, hundreds of father figures around, and like elder activists, honest, decent men who've built big companies and then had it all stolen away from them by government scumbaggery. People who've really kind of lived a rich, full life, who kind of play surrogate to my lack of a father figure in my own life, and I'm still not entirely over it. I'm making the best of a bad situation, but at the end of the day, it's left an imprint on me that I may not ever be able to get over, you know. And that's what people have to understand, is that the breakdown of the family unit is the breakdown of society.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, mate. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I mean, and that's like prevalent as within Māori society now, you know, as soon as the urban drift occurred, you know, and then there was that huge breakdown, and then they got assimilated into the city life and into being, you know, into the Western Laborers. Way of thinking and believing. And then, and that's what's, you know, I see that in the kids even at our school, you know, those sorts of notions and ideas that, you know, I'm not clever enough, or you know, and it's like, fuck, that's a load of shit, man.
Hegemony.
Yeah, hegemony, I think it is, yeah, or something like that.
Yeah.
But you know, and it still plays out, and you can't, well, it's just got such a lot to do with the breakdown of the family and the history of New Zealand, you know. It's just
the classic divide and conquer, you know. They absolutely succeeded in what they wanted to do. I mean, divide, conquer, smash them into the point where they actually believe the shit that we're telling you. You're dumb. You're dumb. Yeah. Oh, that's right. I'm dumb.
I think that's a great point to make, and I think it's also a good point to admit. I admit that I'm dumb. I admit that I don't know what I'm talking about. You know why? Because if I never admit it to myself, if I never question, am I being the idiot here, then I'll never find out whether or not I really
am.
I'm
an idiot. That's
if
right.
If I'm not questioning it, I'll probably become it. You know what I'm saying? It's the the ballad of the cosmic schmuck. Cosmic meaning big, schmuck meaning idiot. And there's this guy, initials R-A-W, Raw, and he had this quote and says, there's the ballad of the cosmic schmuck. If you're sitting there, and you're thinking to yourself, am I the cosmic schmuck? Then he says that you'll probably never become the cosmic schmuck. But if you're living your life, you never even just take that moment, just one moment out of your life. You have a look at how you're dressed or or where you're living or what kind of job you're in or what kind of friends you're hanging with or what kind of thing that you hope to do with the rest of your life and whether or not it's true. And you go, am I the cosmic schmuck? If you never do that, you'll never be able to course correct.
That's
you
right.
know, people have got to constantly admit, I'm dumb, I don't know what I'm talking about, and I don't know, and I'm so dumb that I don't know how dumb I really am. Please enlighten me. Please give me some information that'll actually be of value to me. Don't tell me lies. Don't tell me mismanaged operations of scumbaggery, okay? Just tell me the frickin' truth, okay? I can take it. I'm a grown person. You can swear if you want. I'm over 18. Fuck it. Just tell me the truth. I want to know what the fuck is going on here. Because if I don't know what the hell is going on, how in the fuck am I going to do anything about it? You know? And surprisingly enough, that's why nothing is being done. You know? Throughout the whole of society, everything just seems to be churning and getting worse and worse and worse and worse. Or at least that's the stuff that gets all the press coverage. You know, and that leaves a really sour taste in people's mouth. So they never think to yourself, you know, am I the cosmic schmuck by sitting here and actually not doing anything? Am I the cosmic schmuck because I'm posting on people's protest comments on Facebook or something like that, saying protesting never works, you'll never achieve anything, and I'll never come out and help you because I don't think that it achieves anything? Hold on a second, bro. Are you telling me that by not coming out and not doing anything of any kind, that you're going to achieve more than me?
What's that? That's the definition of insanity, isn't it? So doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting something different.
Yeah, it's like, I'm really surprised. I've been doing nothing all my life and I've got nothing to show for it. Fuck, that's confusing.
What? Why has it all changed?
You know, vote for the next person that campaigns on a platform of change, you know, see how that works out for you. You know, there's people who accuse me of being unprofessional. I'm like, bro, this world's currently run by professionals, isn't it? And they go, yeah. How's that working out for you?
Yeah. Famous Dr. Phil quote, eh? How's that working for you, buddy?
Yeah. And that's the thing. You got to do that bit of self-analysis and figure out where you fit in the world. You know, everybody's been endowed, or at least I believe, everybody's been endowed with innate talents and skills. Some people have had really bad vaccine reactions and have severe autism and they can't communicate or whatever. I'm not sure what they're capable of contributing. However, there have been cases where a couple of boys with autism went into a school and a couple of people took very, very close attention to them. And through intense repeating of things, really intense, like every single word, every single sentence, and so on and so forth, by the end of their school career, they were capable of speaking fluent English without so much as a stutter. And they gave a valedictorian speech thanking the people that taught them how to speak so that they could communicate, because as children, they weren't able to communicate, and that's why they're always having tantrums, that's why they're scratching and biting and hitting people, because nobody took the time to actually sit there and intensively educate them how to communicate properly, considering their disability. You know, how about them apples? Is that not a story of the triumph of the human ability, of the human spirit, of people who actually give a frack about one another? That's what happens when you actually care about one another. You know, there's three words that I really, really love. I don't know. And the three words I really, really hate. I don't care. And the three words that I think that are absolutely essential for personal growth. I was wrong.
Yeah, hard out. That's something that one of our nephews, his dad, has told him. He taught him, if you don't know, make it up.
Yeah, make
and
it
it's
up.
Like, and that's really fucked him up, because you know he will never admit that he's wrong, you know, and that's where, you know, it starts falling down. Like, you know, and I think a lot of it too is because that you get detached and from actual relationships from people when you start thinking like that. And, you know, I see some of the stuff that he gets up to, and there's a complete detachment, you know, from when he's talking and hurting people. Yeah. And that realization that you're actually hurting someone, you know, by even admitting just like, oh, maybe I was fucking wrong and maybe I did hurt you, you know. Yeah, a lot of that it comes into play too, even when I'm working, you know, you see it all the time, just those little things like that.
Mm. And because,
some people, yeah.
Well, just to clarify things, our nephew's father's Pākehā. So coming from his background, we do understand why he acts the way he acts. And I'm not saying all Pākehās are like this. It's just like a generalization that all Māoris should be going to jail and whatnot. But it has an element of truth in it. Like I think I'd rather call it a Western upbringing, you know, where you're told to suppress all your anger and suppress all your feelings and don't cry. Don't cry. A man doesn't cry. A man doesn't cry. Mm. So hold those feelings in and just wait for about 50 years until they blow up in your face.
Yeah.
I wonder why.
Well, the thing is, they don't blow up in your face in 50 years. They blow up in your face every day.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. If you're living with a denial, it's a constant trauma and it's constant anguish and constant pain until you deal with it. And it took me years to get over getting busted, to get over realizing university was a scam, to realize that every single employer that I've ever had was quite likely a clinically diagnosed psychopath. These kind of things were pretty intense and really harsh to deal with. And I think it was when I was listening to Alex Jones and hearing him get all really angry and uppity and screaming and so on and so forth. Something really awakened in me because I was actually just as angry as him. But I go about it a different way. And when I first went out, you know, going to protests and stuff like that, I was trying to be Alex Jones more or less, you know, I was yelling, screaming, angry and insults and talking about tyranny and scumbaggery and what have you. But now I've kind of, it's sort of like you come into your own after you imitate somebody else and you find out what your different take is on it, you know, similar message, just with a different methodology. And that's how you really make something your own, I think. And so now when I'm chanting protest and something like that, I'm clever, I'm witty, I'm making the whole crowd of protesters laugh with jokes through the megaphone and so on and so forth, as well as injecting really intensely interesting and I feel important information about how the country's going and who we are as people and what it is we're willing to fight for, what it is we're willing to die for. Because I don't think that if we do this gently, gently, softly, softly approach all the time, that we're going to achieve the results that we really need.
Yeah, that's right.
And there's plenty of people like that who don't want to tell you the whole truth, you know, straight up into your face. And my perspective is we're out of fucking time. Okay, we're living in a system that's being so vastly built up in every single area that the only way to fight it is as hard as we freaking can with every moment that we're alive. If we don't, it will probably beat us and enslave the entirety of humanity till the end of freaking time. Imagine that. Imagine a dark age, like in Judge Dredd, where everybody's stuck in a slave block, no bigger than an office desk, you know, that's your apartment to live in, that kind of thing. No freedoms. Everywhere you go, your eye scanned, face scanned, frickin' everything scanned, just to make sure that you're not going into any unauthorized zone, just to be sure that you're not doing anything you're not supposed to be doing. Just a complete and utter state of human darkness, servitude, brainwashing, mind control even, like real, actual, they've got frickin' technotronic devices, technotronic mind control. You ever heard of this stuff? It's freaky. The DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects, that works with the CIA has developed.
This is back in the like 70s, wasn't it?
No, no, no. This is
currently.
This is talking about currently. DARPA's still around today, and they were experimenting with a lot of these technologies for many decades. But what they got now is a lamppost. Okay, have you ever heard of the smart lamppost?
No.
No? Well, it's very interesting. They got speakers and cameras in them and little digital flags so that they can sell the space to advertisers and the lampposts. And they'll have smart light sensors as well. So if one side of the street is dark because the sun's going down but the other side isn't, one side of the lights will go on and the other side will stay off until it's completely dark, you know? Mm. And they've got these technotronic broadcasters in there that can actually pump out sound waves that actually affect your mind and can calm you and can either calm you or make you angry or whatever. There's a whole bunch of experimentation that's been done with this. So you've got the potential. Like, this is some of the real scary, like, conspiratorial stuff that some people get into, but a lot of people shy away from because they're too afraid of the implications. If you're too afraid of something, you usually refuse to admit that it exists. That's the denial phase. I admit that it exists, you know. That's why I encourage people to listen to my show every day. Because it's just the end of the world. You know, what are you going to worry about? You've got to have a bit of comedy to let yourself through these dark times. Because if you're hearing about scary stuff like that, and you're not having a few laughs while you're talking about it, that information ain't going to sink in. It's going to bang! Right off your third eye and just go cast back out into space and you'll forget about it, hopefully, for the rest of your life until it comes knocking at your door.
Well, lucky we live in the bush where they don't have any lampposts.
Yeah, but they'll probably have... Well, now they'll probably have some drones, and anyway, the police are now trialing drones. Oh, they're for criminals. Yeah, right, sure, they're for criminals. Who did the GCSB spy on? 88 people, which they did illegally, and then all got away with it without charges. Wait, they were all activists, weren't they? Well, we can neither confirm nor deny that. Well, that's a confirmation of sorts.
What was the G... What was it, GC or GSC or whatever?
GC...
What,
like, you know the GC, the Gold Coast, bro? Yeah. And you know SB, son of a bitch? Basically, the GCSB is the Gold Coast sons of bitches, right? And what they're doing is government surveillance and the security bureau. But
government surveillance.
Something along that. Government unconscionable cunt of scumbaggery disorder agency. Yeah, it doesn't matter. They're the guys who basically intercept all international communications that come into New Zealand in order to check them all out, keyword systems, so on and so forth, data mining in order to get information off of possible threats to the country, people who might be pulling off big crimes and so on and so forth. I've been in operation for quite a while. The NSA actually has an office in their building. What does that tell you? Okay, so what they've done with the GCSB is they surveilled, I'd probably say this is just the 88 people that were actually caught out on spying illegally. They're probably spying on more, as far as I know. Everything that comes from a legitimate source is probably illegitimate. So a whole bunch of activist friends of mine contact the GCSB. They say, hey, was I one of the people you were spying on? They say, no, we can never confirm nor deny that. It's like, isn't that interesting? Why wouldn't you deny? All right. So if you said, no, we weren't spying on you, they'd be like, oh, okay, sweet as. You weren't surveilling an activist that was about to take the government to court in order to sue them for all they're worth. You know, that's good. I'm not being surveilled, because that's the reason why they're not confirming nor denying. And when you've got laws that are being broken in order to surveil said people without a warrant, that's breaking the law, isn't it? So you should go to jail if you sign that off. John Key signed some off, I'm sure, and all of these other people working at the GCSB, probably somebody's down the track and paper trail signed that off. Are they going to get in trouble for their crimes against the country? Crimes against people's privacy? Crimes in general? No, of course they're not, because they're the crime lords. That's the thing. The government is a bunch of mafioso crime lords, and they're in league with a bunch of mafioso corporate lords. You know, have a look at the Super City, for example. This was just classic. Me, I've been yelling about this for years and years, since before it was even made law. It's run by the Committee for Auckland. What's the Committee of Auckland, you say? Well, it's an organisation where you have to be invited to be a member, and it costs $10,000 per year to be a member. Really? Who's a member of that? Well, how about the CEO of Auckland City, How about most of the major corporate banks? How about huge private contracting companies? How about all of the people that set the policy for Auckland City to have it run by corporations for corporations? That's who. And they basically write the legislation. They've got their own ticket, you know? They're like Willy Wonka and Charlie in the Factory. I've got a golden ticket. And I can pass any laws I want because nobody will ever arrest me because I control the judiciary. You know, it's just like this huge nest of thieving, scumbaggery, evil, pedophile, viper scum that are running this whole freaking country. I don't care what city or town you're in. There's probably some kind of scumbaggery thief of epic proportions running the show. I don't care if you're out in the middle of the country or whatever. There's probably some farm just down the road from you run by some kind of freaking psychopath who never ever freaking stays up late thinking about stuff because he's got no conscience and goes to sleep right away, even though there's cows and everything. Mowing outside and freaking sheep voting for John Key. Going, it's unbelievable. This country's in really big trouble.
You know what? What's really sad is we let them get away with it.
How do you let away? If you don't have a gun, right, and somebody's got a gun on you and you begrudgingly give them your jewelry, are you letting them get away with it? Or is he
What I'm saying is, as we have votes, right?
Allegedly. Now,
well,
because under electoral law, if you're signed up to vote, if you're registered to vote, which you're legally supposed to, and if you don't register to vote, it's like a $500 fine or something, which a lot of them, they don't even chase up anymore because they'd rather you not vote specifically. And here's why. If you don't vote, if you don't cast that ballot, the government then passes that ballot for you in the percentage and the order of parties that were already voted for. So if National wins the election, that means the majority of those uncast votes automatically go to National by proxy. If Labor wins, all of those go to them by proxy. You see what I'm saying? So that means when we had the lowest voter turnout since 1886 for the 2008 election, the 2012 election, sorry, because everybody's saying, oh, National's going to win again, National's going to win again, all in the media and everything like that. It wasn't true. There was a good 50, 60, 70% of people in this country who didn't want National, but only 25% of them voted.
Right. And that's what I mean by we let it actually slip away from us, and because we think, wow, why question it? It's easy like this. Life is easy when we don't have to take responsibility for anything.
Yeah.
You know? Let those I don't feel like questioning John Key and whoever else is in government because I don't have the nuts to, really.
Yeah,
it's a little bit sad, but hey, you got to laugh about it because my nuts are bigger than yours sometimes. Not yours, but yeah, other people's anyway.
People just get depressed, you know. They sit there and they see all the New World Order and the scumbaggery and they can't be bothered. They don't see anything getting any better. So they say, why bother? Yeah. I'll just take personal responsibility for my kids and my family home and so on and so forth. Really, how are you going to take care of your kids and your family home when the government's working to destroy the family unit and making houses so expensive that you can't afford them and food so expensive that you can't afford it and power so expensive that you can't afford it and a smart meter on every home that tells them where you are and what you're doing in your house at all freaking times and pings it back, you know? What do you think you're not going to lose by doing nothing? You're going to lose everything, all right? And that was the realization that really hit me. Oh my God, they're actually going to fucking kill me. At some point down the track, if I don't stop this massive tyrannical scumbaggery system from taking over the whole freaking country and putting us under its whim, they will actually have the power to throw somebody like me in front of a firing squad. I shit you not. And they fucking will, as long as nobody stands to oppose them.
Well, how did they did that to, what's his face? Down in Tūhoe? No, they hit him by, was it Ruakinana?
Yeah, I'll
just
a few of them.
Yes, back in the days, bro, that happened to us all the time. You know, you stand up and you get shot for it. Like how we celebrate on November the 5th for Guy Fawkes Day. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows it's Guy Fawkes Day. But little do they know that it's actually Rongo Mai and I forget the other brother's name, but
they did a peaceful protest down in Taranaki, down, well, I don't know.
Te Whiti Orongo Mai.
Te Whiti Orongo Mai. And they held a peaceful protest because they were basically getting all their land stolen off of them. And I think this is actually, was it after or before Mahatma Gandhi did his, well, anyway, they, just because they didn't want their land to be taken away from them, they were actually killed for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a number of things that the government can do to defend itself, and it usually goes in a system. So they'll try one thing, and if that doesn't work, then they try the next, and then the next, and then the next. The final being extermination, right?
Yeah.
So let's say I speak out against the government. Okay, so first thing they're going to do is ignore me. Mm. Once it gets to the point that they can't ignore me, once there's a huge public backlash and so on and so forth that they can't ignore, then they'll start disinformation, all right? And if people see through their lies and misinformation and endless campaigns through the newspapers and the mainstream media that are on a constant basis saying Vinnie Eastwood's crazy, he doesn't know what he's talking about, he's a conspiracy theorist, if that still doesn't work, if people don't buy it, then they start intimidation. Then they start following you around with cars and so on and so forth. Then they start listening to your phone calls deliberately and me and my friend John Eisen were on the phone line the other day, and there's every time I call him, and it doesn't happen with anybody else that I'm talking to, there's always this clicking on his line every now and again. It's because they listen to him. Eh? He does this this magazine here, Uncensored, warning, attack of the medical system. It's now the second leading cause of death in New Zealand. And his and his wife, who lives in the same house, does this one, the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine, which is, in my opinion, probably the best natural medicine magazine in the world today. And the it gets... They're trying to make your fear overtake you, okay? So if you're afraid of being ignored, you won't start. If you're afraid of being demonized, you won't continue. If you're afraid of being surveilled, you won't keep up the fight. Then, after that doesn't work, then they start sabotaging you. They'll sabotage your business. They'll draw up some kind of BS legislation or whatever that really messes with you. Or
Hubbard.
Yeah. Same thing happened to Alan Hubbard. They'll either make up some BS legislation or, even better yet, they'll just come and frickin' take it from you completely illegally and use their control over the investigation houses and so on and so forth. And you can only really do this from a higher level in order to prevent any investigation, to prevent yourself suffering any of the consequences of your scumbaggery. And you're just taking out your competition now with Alan Hubbard, you know. And if that doesn't work, then assassination. Which I think also calls into question Alan Hubbard's death 3 days before he was about to go into court with enough evidence to basically get John Key convicted of fraud and a whole bunch of his cronies too. And then he magically dies after a car accident. He didn't die during the car accident. He suffered a few injuries. The guy was traveling on the wrong side of the road while Alan Hubbard and his wife were parked on one side of the road at 100 kilometres an hour, full tilt, coming at them, towing a very, very heavy concrete mixer behind him, smashes into him. They wound up going to Oamaru Hospital or wherever the frack it was. It might have been Timaru. And they noted that Alan Hubbard was like smiling and laughing and making the nurses laugh and that kind of thing. He was in good spirits. And then they wheel him out. He says, hey, goodbye, everybody, you know, and they chuck him on a helicopter. And in like the 5-minute ride from there to Dunedin Hospital, he died of a heart attack.
Yeah.
And I was just like, isn't that really freaking convenient? Isn't that just a mite suspicious, you know? There's something really fucked up going on in this country, and it doesn't matter how much wealth you have, doesn't matter how much power you have. As soon as this power structure identifies you as one of its threats, if they want what you have, or if they just want to take you out, they can do it.
What about, you got to tell us, because I was listening to your interview with Kitty Campbell, man. That was pretty cool. I loved, can you fill us in a little bit more detail? Like she withdrew $15 million or something like that?
Okay, so for those who are not familiar, there's this thing called personal sovereignty or free man on the land. What's it called? Maritime law. Basically, when you're born, you get given a birth certificate, much like a shipping receipt. That's why they call it being birthed, right? And then that shipping receipt goes one copy to the government and one copy to you, so you can identify yourself. And so the government can start trading your stock. That's why you're called livestock on the stock market. You look up your little code, the shipping number on your birth certificate, you'll be able to see that. Now, if you'll be able to look it up on the stock market in New York, by the way. That's very freaky, isn't it? Yeah. Well, what happens is they attach a lot of money to each and every single one of these new birthed slaves. And they open an account in your name when you're born, which you can access when you're 18, provided you know of its existence. And it keeps and it has a hell of a lot of money in there. Everybody's worth a hell of a lot. You can actually look it up on the stock market and see how much you're worth. And if you want to, if you know how to do all the legal documentation and filing with a bank or other organization, you're capable of making a withdrawal from that specific bank account. This is what Kerry Campbell found out, and this is what she did. She withdrew $15 million from her bank account, you know, that's on the stock exchange and what have you, because she wanted to feed her kids, she wanted to have something for them to leave behind, and she also wanted to show the system that she knew how to work it the way the banksters do. All the big banksters and scumbags and JP Morgan and Merrill Lynch and all that kind of stuff, the real, real top brass, they know this. And here's the other thing about knowing about your personal sovereignty is that statutes don't apply to you anymore, right? What? Laws apply to you. You can't hurt nobody. You can't damage their property. But that's the only real laws that we have. Those are called common laws. All the rest of it, taxes, vehicle registration, any kind of cost from the government that you could conceivably think of is not law. It's statute. It doesn't actually apply to sovereign beings, only to businesses or people that have actually consented that they are not the sovereign being, that they are the person on that birth certificate. Because that birth certificate, that driver's license, it ain't you at all. It's you'll notice when you look at them that it's all done in capital letters. Now, when you write your name down on a piece of paper, do you write it in all capital letters? No, you don't. You've got a capital at the start of the name, and that's about it, right? Well, you know what lists everything with all capital letters? Companies. You give a look at the company stock exchange and everything. All companies are registered with capital letters. You see right here, Eastwood, Vincent, Christopher, John, all in capital letters, right on my license there. There is nothing about this license that represents me, Vinny Eastwood, the man. This is Vinny Eastwood, the straw man. This is the corporation. This is what they charge you with. As soon as they get, this is why the cops always ask for ID first, because they're identifying which account to accredit the loan to when they give you a ticket. Okay? Oh. So if you say, no, I'm not actually Vincent Christopher John Eastwood here, I'm just the administrator of that account. Oh.
So you're treating yourself as a business.
And then they can't charge me with anything. They can't give me fines. They can't take me away with anything that's not a breach of common law, which is I have to not hurt anybody and I have to not damage or steal anybody's stuff. Seems pretty reasonable, right? Wouldn't you love to live in a world where you don't get taxed, where the only time you would ever actually have your freedom or liberty deprived of you is if you deprive somebody of their right to safety because of you?
You know, and as I've been listening to you, I've been thinking, like, yeah, because I watched that that doco on the corporation, the one on the YouTube, and you know, the things that you're saying could be seen as very far fetched, but when you have a good watch of that doco and it breaks it down how they actually brought in the how they established actual corporations, and when we start talking about psychopaths, and then they go through all that whole list of a psychopathic murderer,
mm-hmm.
And then they tick like just about every one of those boxes, you know, just like the breakdown of the family, what is it called, like a recluse, and social outcast, and the corporation ticks like every box. And then, you know, when you're listening to this, sometimes you think, oh, that's quite outlandish. But when you look at it in that sense, it's like none of that is outlandish.
Yeah.
Like it is so much the fucking truth.
Yeah.
And they would so much do that, you know, and it's like, fuck, man, it is pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
the American Medical Journal states that a psychopath is somebody who will be very nice and charming, quite enchanting when you meet them, actually, and they know how to draw you in. They are capable of reflecting. Yeah. It's very similar to mind reading. They're capable of detecting what it is that you're missing in your life, and then pretend to be that thing to get them to get you to trust them, so that they can take something from you when you're not looking. Right?
Yeah.
And the ways that you can see these people is if they're laughing or smiling. Like, you see me laughing and smiling, you see how my eyes are crinkling a little bit.
Yeah.
Psychopaths don't do that. When they laugh, when they smile at you, they smile like this. Okay. The eyes don't crinkle. This is what's it called? It's a non-intentional body signal that the smile that they're going here is fake. Every single time you look at John Key when he's smiling, look at his eyes. Never are his eyes smiling too. He's never in on the joke with you because the joke's on you. And the likely places the American Medical Journal goes on to say that you will find these particular psychopathic characters are in areas of power and control, specifically entertainment, business, politics, religious gurus, lawyers, and doctors.
All
positions of power.
Right. Now, it doesn't mean that everybody in those professions are psychopaths. Psychopaths only generate about maybe 4% of the population. But the problem is, they're the 4% at the very top who run it. So if you imagine for a moment that somebody's saying to you, but how could they do this to people? You know, I would never do that to people. I would never destroy their country and their land and take their children off them and rape them and so on and so forth. I would never decapitate somebody and drive across two states wearing their head as a hat. You know, oh my God, I can't believe I don't understand it. You know why you don't understand it, don't you? Because you're not a fucking psychopath. If you were a ruthless, horrific, inhuman psychopath, nothing in society wouldn't make sense to you at all. Everything would make perfect sense.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So if you want to expose it, learn how to think like a psychopath. I've learned how to think like a psychopath, you know. Think about the worst things you could ever do to people, you know.
Yeah,
think about the most horrific deceptions that you could never pull off by yourself without an intense guilt that would keep you up for weeks and weeks, maybe months or years at a time. Right. And then imagine that that's how you think, and you still get to sleep at night. Because psychopaths, I mean, a friend of mine, Thomas Sheridan, he wrote a great book about psychopaths called Puzzling People, The Labyrinth of the Psychopath. And I asked him one time, like, I was kind of like doing in an introspective moment. I was kind of thinking, you know, am I a psychopath? You know, what was that? And he asked me a question, Vinny, when you go to sleep at night, do you think about lots of things? You know, lots of things that happen to you during the day, things that are worrying you. And I go, yeah, I do the majority of my thinking at night. Well, then you're not a psychopath. Psychopaths, when they go to sleep, it's lights out as soon as the head hits the pillow. And that's the truth of it.
Nice.
Yeah, he's a great Irishman.
But when you think of it, like, I was just thinking about when, you know, reading books and shit, and they've got, like, in fantasy books, you know, in times of war and stuff, and then you always get the characters who just fucking fall asleep, you know, after war and stuff like that, and, you know, then you think, well, fuck, he must be a fucking psychopath, you can just go to sleep after you're fucking decapitated. Yeah. Like,
and this is the thing, you know, a lot of people might be born psychopaths, but there's no real way of telling whether an infant is a psychopath, really, is there?
We've got a potential of being a psychopath, but we don't all act on it.
It's a parasite. Like, they've actually got photographs of it. It's an actual fucking parasite that attaches itself to the brainstem, and it can divide itself, much like cell membranes. It's capable of splitting itself off and infecting other hosts. If you're around a psychopath a lot, they can actually infect you. that's the scariest thing that I found out. And I spoke to three different fields of people, people who are experts on psychology, people who are experts in the spiritual aspects of it, talking about the angels and demons and so on and so forth. And then people who were experts in ancient lore and what the ancient peoples told about these entities and so on and so forth. And they all concurred that it was an absolutely non-human entity that was infectious, like a mind parasite. And it is capable of taking people over. And the way that it feeds allegedly is off negative waveforms. So if you feel fear,
that's sort of where I was thinking,
fear, hate, anger, if you have a look at the radio forms, they'll send out
these wave
patterns. Okay, now a love wave pattern is a very rapid, sharp kind of beat. You know, you see those when you're looking at radios. And then there is the fear pattern, which is a very long, undulating curve. And what the long, undulating curve does is like your pulses and your emotions are actually connected to your DNA in a way, because your DNA is a transmitter. Like, you see how you got those two curlings, the double helix, much like a radio transmitter. It can send and receive vibrational signals. And what happens is, when you're feeling fear, it'll bump up against your genetic code. So it'll bump here, bump here on the other side of the waveform, and then bump over here. But when you got love, it's bumping, 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 and it just supercharges your entire genetic makeup. It actually unlocks potential abilities and psychic abilities and so on and so forth. And what the psychopaths don't want is people waking up to that potential that the love waveform can actually give human beings. We can actually see into each other's souls, develop a profound sense of intuition, creativity, so on and so forth. You'll see this all with creative people and people who are usually not psychopaths. There was also a list in the American Medical Journal about this. Kindergarten teachers, artists, and musicians. Right, so these are the kind of people for whom creativity and love is a way of life, and they've been able to harness through those waveforms ability to see things that are not there, to create things that do not yet exist. That's why psychopaths are always backward looking people. If you notice, they're always trying to keep things the way they are or try and make them worse. It's because they can't create or think about a new reality. They can't see it. They can see what they've got, and they can see their lust for power and control, but they can't create anything for themselves. That's allegedly why why they're intensely jealous of really creative, entrepreneurial people. It's because they've got something that they fucking don't. And it makes them intensely jealous, and they really hate people like me, which I believe is why I was kind of like predated on by a couple of psychopathic employers in my time. They steal your ideas. This is the thing. You ever had somebody, you know, you came up with a really great idea or whatever, and then you tell somebody about it, and then all of a sudden that person starts to make out like it's their idea and starts going ahead with it without you and that kind of thing? Fucking psychopaths stealing your ideas, because they got none of their fucking own. So if you come up with a really brilliant idea, that's the one they'll fucking steal. And then when you come and try and talk to them about it, they say, hey, fuck you, man. If you tell anybody about this, you're fucking dead. I will rape your children. I will burn your fucking house down. Keep your fucking mouth shut. You know, Jake the Mustard style, real fucking scary people. And that's why they get away with it, because they intimidate the living shit out of people, and they're very, very scary. And there is no way to get justice, like, really. Psychopaths are not the kind to go down without a fight. If you want to take one of them down, you'll most likely lose everything that you hold dear in the process. Do not fight them. Do not expose them. Do not go after them. Don't do anything of the sort. Once you know somebody is a fucking psychopath, stay away from them at all costs. They're a toxic parasite of the soul, and having any contact with them whatsoever will never be beneficial, no matter what they're promising you. Doesn't matter if they're promising you a big record label deal. Doesn't matter whether or not they're promising you a better country for the future. Mm-hmm. Stay away from them. Record every single conversation you have with them, and for that matter, record every single conversation you have with a cop, a lawyer, or a judge. Every single one of them. Because if they try to commit some kind of scumbaggery, they'll never admit whether or not that conversation took place. Always have those frickin' recordings, man. Always. They've been an absolute savior. You know, in New Zealand courts, they don't even allow recordings in a lot of sessions.
Yeah.
How can it be a court of record if there ain't no frickin' record? We got our judges are related predominantly. We've got like 168 or some odd high court judges in this country, and like 120 of them are like cousins, first cousins. You know, you try getting a judgment, summary judgment, and you're like, okay, well, I need to fight this judgment. I'm going to go find another judge. Sure, how about my cousin? He'll sort you out, bro. He'll give you the exact same judgment, you scum, because we rule this country and you're just slaves. You know, these kind of people. Oh, my God. No wonder they wear black robes like they're in some kind of a fucking cult. I'm surprised they're burning children in effigy in the goddamn courtroom, you know? Just underneath the bench, you know, take a bong hit of dead baby smoke. I don't know. Oh, God. Yeah. See, just like I say, you know, you can imagine the worst of the worst of the worst, and you've still not even hit anywhere near it as, like, I think somebody was telling a friend of mine, he's like real deep in the NSA or whatever, and he's a classified source, nobody knows his fucking name or whatever, and he says, you know, back in the 70s, he talks to a friend of mine, and he says, you know, however bad you think it is, it's 100 times worse. And then he talks to him in the 80s, and he goes, no matter how bad you think it is, it's 1,000 times worse. And he's like, and then he talks to him in the 90s, and he goes, no matter how bad you think it is, it's 10,000 times worse. And he's just like, fucking, how bad is it going to get? And he goes, millions of times worse, billions of times worse. There is no upper effort. I mean, like, let's think about evil, pure, unbridled, irrational evil. Okay, let's say I gave you $1,000 and said, bro, go out on the town, be as debaucherous as you want, break as many laws as you can without getting caught for $1,000, okay? You can get up to quite a bit of scumbaggery in a night, couldn't you? What if I said, here's $200 trillion and go out and commit as much evil and scumbaggery across the entire world till the end of time? That's the situation we're in. It's quite sad, but hey, look at it this way. Even though they've got all this apparatus, all this money, all this scumbaggery, all this force, all this conjecture, all this propaganda machinations of the state, we're still beating them fucking hands down. Yeah. Facebook is dominated by truth. Yeah. It's spreading out on all the social networks like fucking wildfire. The Syria invasion gets fucking called off. Vinnie Eastwood has nearly 10,000.
They got slammed big time.
And then they shut the whole government freaking down, you know? That's how bad this, you know, we think the situation's bad for us. Imagine the situation for the people who are actually trying to get it through and how desperate it is, because they're being exposed and they know. Just like moss, mildew, and so on and so forth, you shine light on it, it starts to die, doesn't it? Yeah. Okay? And people forget about the natural world and its relationship with man. Where does scum accumulate on a pond, exactly?
The top.
Yeah. That's what people have forgotten. The scum aren't the homeless people in the streets. Oh, the scum aren't the single
That's
mothers.
The top, buddy.
The scum are the CEOs. The scum are the prime sinisters. The scum are the ministers of social development. The scum are all of those pieces of trash that are actually looking down upon you, because light doesn't penetrate through scum, and everything beneath it gets deprived of oxygen, vitamin D, and nutrients, and frickin' dies. And this is the lesson of history. Scum get in control, and they kill everything. They kill the economy, they kill the people, they kill freedom, they kill intelligence, they kill anything that's good about the human race. And what really pisses me off is that there's some people that have been living in the system for so fucking long that they actually believe that there's no value in the human race. Like, people that are pro-fracking Facebook message, you know, said to me, well, wouldn't it be a good thing if man was wiped out? I mean, how long do you think the Earth would take to recover from us? You know, and it's just like, dude, you're saying it like you're not one of us. And if you want to get rid of people in order to make the world a better place, volunteer. I'm not going to stop you, bro. You know, go for your life, son. Lead by example. Yeah. I'm killing myself to make a better human race. Thank fuck. Another one gone. Another one bites the dust. And then...
Ding, 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 ding.
and another one down, and another one down. You know, just more like another one sucks John Key's wang. Another one sucks his cock.
And another one.
And another one coming along, and another one coming along, and they're all lining up. Hey, boom. We're going to suck John's cock. Another one lining up. Yeah, see, this is the thing. Music, creativity, love. Have you ever seen the movie I Am Legend with Will Smith?
Yeah, but
all right, love that bit where you said about Bob Marley, about how Bob Marley got shot this one time, and motherfuckers tried to assassinate him, and he said that Bob Marley was like a virologist. He saw racism, hatred as a disease, and he feels that you could cure that disease, literally cure racism, by injecting music and love into people's lives. And somebody came and tried to frickin' assassinate him for saying it, and he had a music concert on like in two or three days.
Yeah.
In 2 or 3 days, he walked out there, cast and all, and performed. He said that if the people who are trying to destroy this planet don't take a day off, then neither can I. Incidentally, Bob Marley had an unsuccessful tennis career because he could never get a higher score than One Love.
One Love. Nice one, Kaz.
Apparently he had like quite a few different species of kutus, eh, in his dreams. Yeah, apparently.
Well, how true that one was, eh?
Yeah.
Some kind of a crackhead camped out in there.
Yeah. Wow.
Scuttling.
I wonder how many fucking species there are.
Yeah, of kutu.
Well, apparently there's 20,000 species around the world going extinct every day.
I've got about 3. How many you got, bro?
I don't know. Maybe just one, and it's called John Key.
Yeah, we all share that kutu in common, bro.
Yeah. The kutu in common proposal.
A common kutu, cuz.
Yeah. Okay, well, I do feel that New Zealanders have got to wake up, but I'm not going to be the man to wake you up. I really won't be. I'll be the person you come to after you've woken up that you need a way of dealing with the fact that now you know what's going on, because this is not an easy thing to accept. I mean, I transitioning from my belief in the system, voting green and all of this kind of stuff, to realizing that there's a global agenda and Agenda 21, if you ever want to look up that document, freaking crazy.
Agenda 21, folks.
People want to control everything. They want to control everything. Like, it's a big document at the UN. It was signed by Jim Bolger in 1992. George H.W. Bush signed it too on Prince Charles' private yacht during the UN, what's it called, the Rio Earth Summit. And ever since then, all of its aspects of privatization, roading maps and so on and so forth have just basically been the stock and bunker of our entirety of legislation that's been passed since the early 90s. Almost everything that has ever been passed in this country since the early 90s is practically lifted out of this document. Every single part of it is being implemented. And at the end of it, when they have their agenda successful, the agenda for the 21st century, that's why it's called Agenda 21, private contractors will own the entire world. Okay? There will be no private property, and only bankers, big international corporate bankers, will own everything. And all the rest of us are their serfs, slaves, living in their slave blocks, next to railroad tracks, no movement, no freedom, surveilled under 24/7, educated under mandatory education requirements to keep you dumb, so you're just smart enough to do the work, but not smart enough to realize how badly you're being fucked every single day by scum.
Yeah.
That's not a future I want.
That's what was highlighted in that corporation too, eh? That there, you know, that there's going to be a time, and a lot of them were saying that every part of the earth should be privatized. Right from water, right, you know, which is starting to happen.
And
that's what they all agreed upon, that every part of the earth should be privatized. Okay.
Fabian socialism. Have you ever heard of it?
What's that?
Fabian socialism.
Fabian socialism, no.
Well, you go have a look. Bomber Bradbury is a Fabian socialist. A lot of the members of the Labour Party are Fabian socialists. The symbol of Fabian socialism is, well, they got two symbols, really, but the main one is a wolf in sheep's clothing. The secondary one is a tortoise wielding a hammer. All right? So just think about what those symbols connote. Tortoise moves slow, but with his hammer, as soon as he's gotten to the point, brings the hammer down on you. The wolf in sheep's clothing is just your friend, nice and friendly, until he eats you. All right? Those are Fabian socialists, man. They're very scary people. And what was his name? George Orwell, who wrote 1984, was a Fabian socialist. And the reason why he wrote 1984 is because this is what the Fabian society was building since back then. They've been building this big system for a long, long, long freaking time. They play the long game. I mean, you and me, we say, oh, we want to get these people out of power, or we want to stop this, we want to stop it now, right now. Fabians don't do that. They say, well, what we're going to do is we're going to change society very, very slowly over time. So the time we announce to people, yes, now you're a slave and a serf and whatever, you've been brainwashed and very, very slowly eased into accept that programming so gradually that you didn't even know it was going on.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And I think that that's a very important point to note about New Zealand politics, New Zealand activists, New Zealand commentators and everything. Everybody's got a backstory. Everybody's got some information behind them and so on and so forth. So it depends who you want to listen to. Do you want to listen to somebody who's perhaps playing against you because he belongs to groups that play people endlessly, time over time, who have been shown and documented to be, well, liars, more or less? Do you want to listen to those kind of people? You're not going to really achieve any benefit. Even for every grain and truth that that comes out on it, you're still overwhelmed by an entire beach of lies.
Yeah, man.
And I don't hold to that, and I don't think anybody should really have to deal with that, which is why I'm taking personal responsibility for the media in this country by broadcasting every day, going the videos every day, going to all the protests and filming them and so on and so forth, and I'll be leading the protest charge. And be the MC of the nationwide day of action against the national government on Saturday the 5th of October at 1 p.m. at Aotea Square. This is the first mainstream protest that I've ever actually been asked to lead and organise the speakers for. So we're going to have a number of good speakers in there, like a mayoral candidate and a stalwart defence for New Zealand against Agenda 21.
Saturday.
Yep. At 1 p.m. Aotea Square. So we've got Penny Bright talking about Agenda 21 and the takeover of Auckland by the Committee for Auckland. And we're going to have Marama Davidson talking about Margaret and how it's been so completely destroyed, and now all the motorway and everything coming in there going to cut the neighbourhood in half. We're going to have Sue Henry, who's going to be talking about the Glen Innes operation, how the government came in and bribed a lot of the iwi leaders and local church leaders and all of that kind of stuff, told them that they'd get shares or something really good for their community halls and so on and so forth if they took away all these state houses and established communities by privatising them, you know, and then they just ripped the ground out from under them, and none of those houses are there anymore, nor are the community centres. You know what I'm saying? And we're going to have Vince Seymour on. He's the judicial watchdog. He was the person who was jailed for reporting about the illegal warrants issued by Justice Winkleman and so on and so forth, and went to jail for reporting court corruption. He's going to be a good one. Kerry Campbell, who you mentioned earlier, I've invited her. She's going to come up from the NACI to speak. And we're also going to have Russell Malcolm, who about 10 years ago exposed corruption at the Rodney City Council and had the whole council, including the mayor, fired after being investigated by the government.
Yeah, true. Nice. So good work.
And then the next time he tried to expose him, they threw him in jail without charge, and John Key personally dictated over the phone in the middle of the night after being woken up by one of his protectors to dictate his bail conditions over the phone, including, and this is 5 weeks before an election, by the way, do not contact any member of parliament and do not use the internet.
Oh.
Okay. Shit. Yeah, bro. I mean, seriously. You know what I really hated about protests is that they were all run by one particular group of people, usually the socialist left. I got nothing against the guys personally. I don't agree with the ideology, but they're reasonably good people, some of them, and I don't want to bag them all. However, I'm a little bit more extreme. I don't fall into a paradigm. I don't say National's bad and Labour is good. Therefore.
They're fucking exactly the same, if you ask me. It doesn't really matter who gets in. It's the
lesser of the two evil at the same at the time.
Yeah, but of course,
nothing changes.
Yeah,
and absolutely nothing changes.
Some of the socialists are waking up to this too, and so they split off and they start joining parties like Mana and Greens and so on and so forth. But I feel eventually people are going to have to realize that they don't want groups actually representing their opinion, because those groups don't actually involve them in the workings of the government.
That's right.
What I want is personal sovereignty. I don't want to have to do anything anybody tells me ever again for the rest of my life. As long as I don't hurt nobody or damage or steal anybody's private property, nobody should be able to tell me or force me to do anything. That's what I want. That's the political paradigm I'm coming from.
Yeah,
it's called freedom. And these people in Parliament, they're not interested in freedom. You know, they're always interested in curtailing them. I mean, you dig this. For the last 30 years in New Zealand legislation, the only freedom that was given to people rather than just being taken away was gay marriage. Just think about that. That's the only freedom they actually gave people. All the rest of the time they passed legislation, it was to take away freedoms.
But yeah, man. Yeah.
Okay? That's a massive disproportionate... Nothing against gay people. I'm just saying it's not frickin' equal. Yeah. Maybe straight people should also have rights, you know? Don't you think? But because this way, the gay people can get married, but they still don't have any frickin' rights. Right? You know what I'm saying? This is about what's real. And you only really have three rights. And this was told to me by Grace Hayden, a 15-year prosecuting sergeant for the New Zealand Police. Top lady. Knows her stuff. She said, you've only got three rights, really, at the end of the day. Put up, shut up, or pay up.
Yeah.
Everything else you have to fight and or die for.
Yeah. Yeah, man, that rings very, very true for us as Māori as well, you know? Shit. It gives us an interesting point there. I mean, do we continue to fight? Do we continue to fight for our... And you said it, because our word for... freedom is either tino rangatiratanga or manamotu hake, eh? Would you?
Tino rangatiratanga, I think that was sort of created around the treaty.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, several hapu have come up with certain methodologies in order to violate this using that sovereignty maritime law stuff that I was talking about, you know, with the driver's license and all of that. And so they're creating their own independent states, more or less. You can have a legally declared state without a legally declared border, and which means you get diplomatic immunity, security, and so on and so forth. And it means they can issue their own driver's licenses, they can issue their own vehicle registrations, and so on.
And a lot of that comes under the treaty as well. And I know that there's been quite a few movements to establish that.
Yeah.
But they always get run down.
Well, speaking of that, at the end of the day, the treaty didn't do a hell of a lot of good for the Māori.
All it did was be used as a
smokescreen in order to buy you off. Basically, it's just like this. Yeah. Bro, you guys are real hard to beat, eh? Fuck. you keep slaughtering all our British troops when we come in and try to, like, grandstand and, like, take you out and stuff, and then you just, like, cut off our fucking heads and then run back into the bush, you bastards. Shit, hell, we're going to beat them. I know, bro. What? Oh, dude.
The Frenchers are coming.
What about, bro? If we, like, make them afraid of, like, other people instead of us, and then say that we're actually here to help them and give them a piece of paper to sign saying that we're going to protect them from now on.
Yeah.
And then when they sign it, we'll use it to steal everything that they've got that we haven't stolen by force already. And they go, fuck, that's a brilliant idea, bro. How'd you come up with that? How'd you come up with that? And then just
they did it across the sea to those fellas in Peru.
It worked for this country and their country with all these indigenous peoples who couldn't speak our language nor know what fucking hardcore lawful manipulation was. So let's just fucking use that, bro. What have we got to lose? Hey, we got nothing. We can't beat them in combat, so let's just beat them with a piece of paper.
Clever bastards.
I've had quite a few Pākehā mates who find it hard to even come around to that realization, eh? But and it's that whole assimilation into that education system where you're not told what actually fucking happened, went on, you know? And I mean, it's like
the real story.
And then they just reproduce the same old shit.
Yeah.
People say the same old fucking thing about Māoris, and it's like, and it's based on what? Fucking nothing. Nothing. It's based on fucking bullshit.
Absolutely
and
nothing.
I suppose that's where, you know, we get quite a bit angry with that, eh? You know? And it's like, just like, fuck, man.
Yeah.
You know, we're still reproducing the same shit, you know, and we're supposed to be fucking progressing in some way.
Well, you are progressing, just not upwards.
Yeah. Regressing, bro. It's called regressing, isn't it? Or digressing or something like that.
Yeah. Well, digressing means when you go in a different direction and you kind of get lost. Regressing is when you kind of atrophy and you kind of get smaller and worse off as time goes on. Now, for those Pākehā who don't believe that the treaty was used, or at least the government structure was used in order to frack Māori over, that's probably because you didn't get wrapped over the knuckles for speaking Māori in class in the 50s. That's probably because you actually own your land and didn't have it stolen from you. That's probably because you've actually got a full family unit, because SIFs didn't take kids off people because they've got a fucking quota, mate. Okay? Māori are disproportionately jailed, disproportionately taken away from their parents, disproportionately arrested, disproportionate this, disproportionate that. Don't look at the cause, just look at the results, and the cause will become apparent.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen by fucking accident. No, okay?
If
you dump a whole bunch of fucking drugs, money, and firearms and shit like that in front of people who've never seen them before, what did you think was going to fucking happen? You know? Why do you think the people on the Star Trek Enterprise never interfere with fucking planets that aren't developed enough yet or whatever? Because they just won't understand. They'll have to be brought up to speed, and then it becomes a huge responsibility of teaching them the way the world works. Or better yet, much easier than teaching them. Much
I just
easier
watched that the other night too. Yeah. Into Darkness. What a great movie, bro. Yeah. I love Star Trek, you know?
Yeah.
How it was one of the fucking first movies that you ever saw interracial kissing. Mm-hmm. Oh, what? The old man used to love it. He used to always watch it, and I now understood what he was going on about, you know. And things have just kind of clicked in the last couple of years for me after having kids and stuff, and just the bullshit that's out there that's fed to you on the platter, and you're going, yummy, not even questioning it. You're thinking, oh, this tastes so good, like all the processed fucking food that we've been fed by. We've just been on the paleo diet for the last 2 years. He's been on it for 2 years, and I've been on it for the last year. And it's amazing. We read this. Oh, I read this piece of literature from dentist Weston A. Price. He said that back in the 1940s, he did a study on all indigenous people. Not all indigenous people.
No, he calls
people.
Them savages. Sorry.
That's right.
Oh, the savage. Native savage.
Yeah, like the savage is not the one that sticks a bayonet in your back and then pulls the trigger and cuts your head off and puts it on a pike as a warning to other Māori. The savage is the one who got his head cut off.
Yeah.
Or the savage is not the one who's gripping their mouths and then hold, you know, so they can, and then he's like probing their teeth and fuck it. It's pretty funny.
It's like a little piggy. Might as well got a fucking pig or a dog and say, look at this.
So the paleo diet is just being raw foodists, basically, to a large degree? Or are you using the old pork bone stew and things like that, the traditional Māori diet?
Yeah. Well, we kind of just, I don't know if paleo is the actual terminology that suits me anyway, because I've got to put off a bit from pork and beef and stuff, so I'm mainly fish and bird now. Chicken.
As close as you can.
As long as it's not KFC, I don't think that that happened in Paleolithic times, you know. You imagine some caveman, what are we going to eat tonight? Fuck, I just got to have the KFC, bro. I was in Mangere the other day, and then I had Marama Davidson here in my studio talking about this kind of thing, about what's happened to Mangere. And it's nothing but cash loan shark shops and fucking fast food restaurants. Fast food? That's Mangere.
Carl's Jr. Yeah.
But if you look, because you know I teach there too. But if you look, you know, just in the vicinity there, fuck, you know, there's like, take your pick. There's a three options from within the K of the radius of the school that we're in for KFC, Burger King, McDonald's, and at every one of those corner settlements is, you know, there's always a fucking liquor store. I think there was, I saw one, there was almost 98 within the vicinity of Papakura. 98 places that sold liquor.
Fucking
that's hell. Fucking hard out
there. Oh, yeah, a mate of mine who was living in Otahuhu, and he's a big drinker, you know, he's gay, so he's got nothing else to do. And he goes, gay guys know how to party, okay? You got to give them that, bro. They know how to drink, they know how to party. And he's a mate of mine. I was just around seeing him because he was getting fracked over out of his house and all of that kind of stuff. Beautiful house, and he's got LED lights and everything inset into his bench top, like he's a tiler and everything, and a builder up, and he's got these fairy lights built into his bench top that flash different colors, like yellow, like pink, like white, like blue. And I said, bro, do you know how I know you're gay? and he did his own little experiment, okay? He wanted to know where the cheapest liquor in Auckland was. Fucking Otahuhu, South Auckland, bro. I was in a shed with a couple of my other mates just a couple of nights ago, and I was talking to them about this, you know, the cheapest liquor in South Auckland, and a couple of the white guys were like, oh no, that freaking bullshit, man, it can't be that way. And then one of the Islander girls with us said, look, let me tell you how easy it is to get liquor in Otahuhu. I owe one liquor shop $870. That's how easy it is.
Yeah, well, even now, The local Clendon one, man. Fuck, can I hear? Yeah. Local Clendon store. Fuck, man, they have the wicked specials, eh? You know, you walk in there, I know even the Christoph, fuck, you know, they're $20 for, you know, almost a 40 ounce.
Dude, they were $20 back when I was like 17 Waiheke Island, bro. And they're still the same price.
They're still the same there, bro.
Is an apple the same price? No. Is a banana the same price? No. Is an onion the same price? No. Everything going up. That's something that I noticed, bro. Everything that is really, really bad for you, fast food, liquor, so on and so forth, prices are staying down just where they've always been. Yeah, anything that's good for you, organic food or fresh fruit and vegetables, stuff like that, unless you go into a farmer's market, everything way more expensive.
And that's what a lot of people, you know, don't understand. They're like, oh, well, you know, you just buy some fucking veggies and stuff. Well, I remember when I used to go to school, you know, we used to go down to the local bakery and you could buy a tank loaf of bread, which was $1, and then you could buy a two pies for $2, and you pull the middle out, you know, and then you just chuck the pie in, and that could last you for like almost 2 to 3 meals. And we still go to school. When we rock past school, we see they got these star drinks now, and they're like one liter, and they cost like $1.20.
Yeah.
And kids are like guzzling them down before they get to school, and you know they're eating pies, 2 to 3 pies, because they're dirt cheap.
Yeah,
and it's like, and then how the fuck do you think they're going to learn?
They wash them down with the fucking fizzy drinks as well, bro. Got all that caffeine and sugar in there. No wonder their teeth are like shit. And then they tell you fluoride's for the poor children in the poor areas and so on and so forth. Well, they don't drink fucking water, do they, cunt? And that's the reason. And that's the reason why their teeth are so goddamn bad, is because all of these corner dairies and everything, they're selling you 2 liters of Mellow Yellow for $1, motherfucker.
So is that what sort of the kōrero of what Marama Davis will be talking about as well?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it'll be part of it. Honestly, I know all of these people that are going to be speaking, but I've given them free rein. They can say whatever the hell they're going to talk about.
Man.
And I've asked them specifically for the juiciest details that they can come up with, something that'll actually nail a frickin' extra bloody coffin nail into bloody John Key's coffin. I want him underground. I want him buried. I want all the information that would make nobody ever trust him for the rest of his natural existence on this planet to come out during these speeches. That's what I'm hoping for, and I know these people, and I know them well, and I know sort of what they're going to say. I don't know exactly, but I don't think that anybody could deliver it other than them. That's why there are no politicians speaking at this protest. None.
Because I was just about to ask him, did you consider like someone like Hone Harawira or someone like him?
Well, absolutely, I've considered Hornet, and that's why there's an open mic at the end the politicians to come up and speak their bit as well. I'd also like
how many have you got?
Hey,
how many politicians accepted your invite?
Actually, I went up New Zealand first. No, Vincent Peters is busy. He's overseas. And she asked the rest of the MPs. They're all busy on that day as well. Same with the Greens. And Labour didn't reply at all.
Surprised?
No, not really. Well, actually, I kind of was just a little bit surprised that the opposition to the government of the Greens, New Zealand First, Labour would not reply to, or would rather reply, but all be too busy to come down to the National Day of Action against the national government. And it might be me, because I've been demonizing as a conspiracy theorist and what have you. I'm not a terribly unreasonable person, am I? I've got a good heart. I've got the gift of the gab, and I really care for people, and I really help people with my broadcasts and so on and so forth. But there's of course those who are in a legitimacy position. If you've got guilt by association, the people that I've invited now are activists.
Just the Green Parties. The Green Party are guilty by association. Mm-hmm. Māori Party are definitely they're guilty by association.
Yeah.
So that's why you haven't got any of those.
Well, they wouldn't want to be seen as conspiracy theorists. And even conspiracy theorists don't use the word conspiracy because it makes people see them
as conspiracy theorists.
So I'm gonna, hopefully shy away from that that conspiracy element. You know, we're not gonna be talking about UFOs and aliens and reptilians and so on and so forth. You know, you can listen to that when I interview David Icke or whatever. But as I have done only the once though.
You got to interview David Icke.
Yeah, you search David Icke on my YouTube channel. It's there, bro. What we're going to be talking about is just the real important core issues of New Zealand. We're not going to be talking about vote for me or vote for him or vote for them or whatever. We're going to be talking about the actual structure of the government, how things are actually played in this country, so that you will know that you would never vote National, and also know that no matter who else you elect, that structure will still be there.
Exactly.
Hopefully,
exactly.
You will call for your parties to get into their election promises that they will change the entirety of the system, head side and downside and every freaking way. Because there's nothing in this country that works terribly well. For every, I think, $30 that you give the government, you get a dollar back in actual benefits.
Do you ever think a capitalist society will work?
Well, every single country that's ever had a massive exploding economy and allowed freedoms, personal freedoms, to actually flourish, have been capitalist societies. No other centrally planned economy has ever come close. Every centrally planned economy from the days of Egypt through to Russia, through to New Zealand, every time they bail out the corporations and the state tax starts taking control, the people always wind up in war, famine, hunger, that kind of thing. It never works.
Inflation.
The problem is that people don't know what capitalism is anymore. They think capitalism is corporatism. Corporatism's entirely different. Corporatism is actually a what they call fascism. Fascism is when the corporations
sort of
take over the state. No. It's more like, here's your two branches of tyranny, okay?
Yeah.
And the branch of tyranny can really be identified with how much personal freedoms it allows you to have. Does it allow you to do this? Does it allow you to do that? Or can it not disallow you to really do anything? Because if you're waiting on a government license or something like that, it means the power to give is the power to take away, much like that of taxation. they just say, oh, we're going to give you all these benefits, and then they take away all your money, and they spend that 30% or whatever that you're paying on your wages every week to pay the foreign banks who just make the money up on a computer and loan it back to you with interest attached, so that the interest accumulates, but that interest is never printed, just the money, so that it is mathematically impossible to pay off the debt. It's like musical chairs. Eventually, somebody's going to be falling on their ass. And that's the thing that's going on here. That's not capitalism. That's socialism. Okay? Socialism, you have a look at the Communist Manifesto, the central planks, private central banking. Okay, what's the cause of everybody's astronomical debt? Private central banking. why is the government always passing really draconian legislation? It's because all their funders are private central banks. Why in the hell is everybody in the entire country in debt up to their eyeballs, and all the money and all the prosperity and all the jobs drying up? Private central banks. Because they can create up to 10 times as much as they have in reserve out of thin air. All they need is your signature. You put down your signature there, and then the money gets willed into existence. Now, that's a hidden tax on the people. The more money there is in existence, the less that each individual dollar is worth. So if I go in and I borrow $50 billion, that's how much New Zealand currently owes, give or take, I would double the inflation. Okay, or something to that effect. I'm just making that up off the top of my head, of course, but it still stands to reason that if you've got, say, $1 billion in the economy, let's just to keep the figures round, and I borrow then $500 million, it means that all of the $1.5 billion that are left are going to have not quite as much value, right? They'll only have one third. They'll have a third of its value taken away from it because you're taking half and you're having it on the end. That's how inflation works. And the banks now have the ability to create all of that out of absolutely nothing. No assets, no gold, no fucking nothing. The gold standard and all of these things that people are talking about. Oh, it'll save us from this economic crisis and all this printed money. Actually, no, that ain't going to save you either, because according to a couple of Wall Street aficionados that I've spoken with, Tom Filer, who has a large trading company in Wall Street, he says that about 90% to 99% of current gold that is sold around the world doesn't even exist. They've got all these gold certificates and everything like that. The gold ain't fucking there. They're just keeping this money machine going and going and going and going and going as much as they possibly can for as long as humanly possible. They started doing it to us back in the 80s. Watched a good documentary by Alistair Barry where he was talking to this big real estate developer talking about what they did back in the 80s. And these Americans come in and they say, how much money do you want? We can loan you any amount of money you want. No problems, man, no problems. And then so he goes like, wow, I've never been offered any amount of money that I could ever conceivably want before. If you go in and try and apply for a loan at a bank or something, you got to have assets, you got to have this, that, and the other. They removed all that, and they got all the wealthiest New Zealanders massively over-leveraged into debt and mortgage, so that when they purposely crashed the stock market in the late 80s, while John Key was a currency trader who made tens of millions off of his currency trades during New Zealand's massive stock market crash, mind you, all of the wealthy people and all of the wealth in this country that was made honestly was destroyed and swallowed up by the big criminal banks. You go to the Reserve Bank of New Zealand, you think that's a government agency? No, it's frickin' not. Why do you think they got a Reserve Bank governor? How many other governors do we have? Governor General, who works for the Queen directly, who has the power to dissolve Parliament like it's an acid. In fact, it would be quite an idea to dissolve the Parliament, particularly the parliamentarians an acid. But the point being, that if you walk into the Reserve Bank of New Zealand, have a guess what's right there behind the front desk. A giant red shield. How do you pronounce red shield in German? Rothschild. We're owned by a foreign banking cartel called the Rothschild family. That's how they turned us into slaves. That's how they turned us into serfs. That's how they've bought up the entire world's economy in a matter of a few decades without people knowing about it. People don't know where their money comes from. They don't know how the debt is accumulated. They don't know how inflation works. They're financially illiterate. And the bankers have made it that way so that we would sit by twiddling our thumbs, maxing out the credit cards just so we can buy some KFC at the end of the week, bro. And then they'll leave us with nothing. We'll be slaves. Absolute, utter slaves. And this is something else that Aaron Russo had in a conversation with Nicholas Rockefeller. He asked him, you know, what's the big plan here? What's, you know, there must be some kind of an end game. You're making all this money. You've got more than enough for yourself. You're hurting people. You're starting all these illegal wars. What's it going to take? And he says, we want control. And everybody's going to have a microchip. It's going to have all your money on there, going to have all your identification. And then if you do anything that we, the bankers, don't want, all we have to do to neutralize you is just turn your chip off. Simple as that. You won't be able to buy food. You won't be able to pay rent. You won't be able to identify yourself, so nobody will give you any money. You're dead, right? Total, utter enslavement and control. That's what the bankers want. The bankers are populated by these big psychopathic character types that I was telling you about earlier. That is their ultimate goal, total control. Because as I mentioned, that's what psychopaths want, power and control. What would you want if you only desired power and control? What would you want more than the will and ability to kill people whenever you want and have no comeuppance? They even have a, Nicholas Rockefeller also said that there are going to be specific types of chips. One type of chips for the slaves and one for the bankers. They're going to be printed with the ID label KMA, which means kiss my ass. So anytime a cop scans your chip and says KMA, he goes, oh my God, I'm sorry, please don't fire me. Even if you've got bodies in the boot of your car and he's seen them, he'll jump out of his skin afraid and let you go. That's what they want, that kind of power. And they will no doubt get it if people aren't informed as to what the real plan is. You know, if somebody's about to scam you and you don't know this, he's probably going to be able to get away with scamming you, right? But if somebody's about to scam you and 2 minutes earlier you had a phone call from a mate going, hey, bro, there's this Nigerian scam going around, eh? And then you get that Nigerian email and you're like, oh, that's a scam. Boom. Because you identify the scam, don't you? What I'm trying to do is identify the scam. The scam that is scamming all of us and has been doing it since birth. Taxation was illegal in the United States from, I think, up until 1913. Taxation was illegal. And they had a 10% growth in their economy every year since the revolution. 1776 through to 1913, 10% growth in the economy every single year. That's what freedom, liberty, no taxation, a strong belief in the Bible, and a country that was frickin' paradise can give you. And in 1913, during Christmas, when there were only like 12 people in the House of Congress, some Rockefeller-funded politicians passed the Federal Reserve Act and gave the issuance of currency away from the people of Congress to regulate and manage its value to private corporations and a banking cartel called the Federal Reserve System. At the same time, they passed a piece of legislation to create the IRS so they could forcibly extract money out of people. And guess who used to work for the Federal Reserve in New York for 2 years as its head of derivatives? John Key. I can't hear you guys.
Ah, mau te wehi, brother. Many good stuff. Man, this has been really interesting, this kōrero. So, it's roughly 6:30 right now, and I'm going to be in a bit of trouble because I didn't cook the kids any kai.
I'll be in trouble because I didn't cook my missus any kai, bro. Don't worry. We're supposed to only do this for like an hour, weren't we?
Yeah, no, but this has been so bloody interesting. Learned quite a few things about the... Oh, I'm going to have to re-listen to this, obviously, because I couldn't get everything in one go, Kaz.
Yeah.
No, it's very interesting. I mean, when you have that list of that that of psychopathic list in your head, like anything is possible. Where, you know, all of those are absolute possibilities. You know, for because I suppose that, you know, after watching that program too, it became real prevalent that, you know, groups of people, maybe not the individuals themselves who are, you know, they're saying, oh no, but we are for humanity, yeah. But when you're contributing to the entirety of that group, you know, and what's spearheading that group is those psychopathic tendencies. You as an individual cell within that bloody entire group is, you know, you ain't gonna do fuck all if you're just gonna be helping, you know, helping it go along. And I suppose when you're thinking of it like that, it's like, well, fuck, you gotta sort of detach yourself as well, and you know, and really get in there and well, at least fucking think about it differently.
Yeah. Well, I'll leave you with something positive then, shall I? A lot of people say that, oh, one man can't change the world, one man can't do anything. Really? What about Gandhi? What about Nelson Mandela? And what about on the negative side? What about Hitler? What about Stalin? Okay. Yep. All right. If anything, one man is the only thing that can change the world.
Absolutely.
Really? Absolutely. That's really what it comes down to. The masses have never changed anything. Never. Yeah. Masses always go along to get along. It is the individual that lights a fire in the minds of men that allows them to burn out of control and consume your country in freedom and bliss and liberty forever. That is what you are capable of. That is your power.
I know that there's that guy that talks about like how you create light, it's like 0.007% of the particles, you know, that they need to be stimulated, and then they vibrate and stimulate everything else, which actually creates the light.
Yeah,
I think it is. So it's like, you know, that was the kōrero towards that. So, you know, being part of that and, you know, just getting in there. And, yeah, it's just been interesting as, bro.
Yeah, that's been awesome, Kaz. Our audience listeners are going to really enjoy this kōrero. You're going to offend some people. So
hope so.
So am I. Yeah, but that's what we're expecting, you know.
It's not necessarily what works is what offends people. It's about what gets repeated to people about seven times by seven different people. That's what you need in order to get people to wake up to an idea that they were never aware of. First, they'll deny it. Then the second person. Thing is, it can't just be you repeating that same thing seven times because they won't listen to you. You're only one person. But seven different people say the same thing. It clicks. So that's what I'm doing is I'm just playing my fucking part, you know. I know that the truth is real hard to deal with. I had to deal with it, and it was really hard. And that's why I have to keep speaking it, so that maybe, just maybe, there'll be six other people who will say the exact same thing to you, that you'll start doing your own research, and then you won't need people like me to inform you anymore because you'll become your own teacher. I feel of myself as a perpetual student. That's why I say I'm so dumb that I don't know how dumb I really am. And thank you guys very much.
Sweet, thanks, my bro. Brother. Thank you. Mamihi kia koe.
Too much, bro.